Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 17 of season 10 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we are our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is a director, producer, distributor, the CEO of Virgil Films, and an Emmy winner, Joe Amedee. Welcome back to the show, Joe.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad that after yesterday's conversation, you're still willing to come back.
Yeah, I thought about it. You know, I dickered all night long, you know.
All right. Well, I'm assuming you were up all night because, you know, today is your birthday. So you've been anticipating it. So happy birthday. You're 33 or 34 at this point?
35. I'm sorry.
I lied.
You know,
there you go.
Yeah. I'm waiting. You know, it is like late in the day here, but is the card coming? I mean,
what do you mean the card? I said the limo.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's taking you back to Stalag Luft 3.
It's taking me back to Stalag Luft 3. Yes.
I want you to get some more dirt.
To Stalag Luft 3.
I want you to,
you know, it's
up,
funny.
I want you to dig up some more dirt on that.
Yeah. That was good. That was really good. Yeah. I mean, it's so my birthday is today, and then 2 days from now, I leave for the Toronto Film Festival.
Ah, very nice. But we'll still find a way to record with you later this week. So, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You're right. 3 days from now, I leave. I leave on the 6th.
Okay.
You know what it is? I asked Toronto to start after my gig with you is done. So
I appreciate
help
that.
Up that's, all the, that's hold very, up all the premieres, important. You know.
You know, come on, Joe. We've talked about it. Priorities in life. You know, I know.
We have. Yeah. Falls. You know, the kids are back to school. Football season starting.
There you
Everything
go.
Changes in September.
Yes, it does. And Joe turns 35.
And Joe turns 35.
That's
I'm
great.
Hoping it's a good year.
I'm hoping it's a very good year for you. And again, as I am a firm believer, and I've told you the story in the past, I have no problem with getting older every year because it's better than the alternative, as far as we know.
You know? It's better than the alternative, right?
Exactly.
One more year, one more day,
and it happens to all of us. So you know, it's not something specific. You know, it's a time for people to celebrate the fact that your parents decided to bring you into the world. That's it.
Yes,
it's
true.
One of those things that we don't really have much of a choice on.
And they didn't give me away, you know.
No. Well, they didn't know how you would turn out, so you know they said, "Well, I will take a chance on him."
Oh.
All right. So minute 17 begins with excuses, and ends with the trains getting detached. So we ended yesterday basically with the fact that everyone seems to be blaming Mrs. Jenkins for the fact that her wedding ring fell down into the toilet bowl that they had to go get a plumber for. I'm not going to go too deep into this aspect, but if a ring falls into a toilet and you flush the toilet, it's going pretty far.
Gone.
It's gone. I don't know
the
if
plunger's
if ring...
not going to take it out.
Yeah. That's right. I don't think bringing a plumber like tomorrow will help or whatever it is, because they don't make it. I mean, when did he say? He said, I told you one of my towel men dropped his wedding ring down the john. So maybe it did happen this morning. I mean, we know that this is 2 o'clock in the afternoon already. So it's possible that sometime during the course of the day it happened and, Kaz only showed up at 2 o'clock. Maybe they're like, okay, nobody used the John, you know.
But that whole plot, I mean, that whole whatever it is, 30 seconds of the film or a minute of the film that deals with the wedding ring, is a distraction to everything that's happening in the background.
That's right.
On purpose. I mean, it's so well written. Forgive me, who wrote this?
Who wrote the novel that this was based on, or
the
who
screenplay.
Wrote the movie?
The screenplay.
The screenplay was written by, I used to know this.
Because it's ingenious that, you know, they're taking our attention away about this ring in a toilet when, you know, it's starting to happen.
That's right.
In the background. And you kind of know it, but then it, all of a sudden you're kind of concerned that they want to get the ring back, which is
correct.
Insane. But it's also what could really be happening in real life. This is how genuine.
That's part of it. I think they're trying to show us the, you know, the, I guess, banality of the work that these people are doing. That what they're you know, what are they dealing with? They're dealing with the fact that someone's wedding ring fell down the toilet. That's what they're dealing with. You know,
it's a big deal. It's a big deal, right, at this moment.
Exactly.
Exactly. They have no idea what a really big deal is at this moment. They're about to find out. But
right. And I mean, Mrs. Jenkins, she's 50. The actress who plays her, you know, Beatrice Windy. She's 50 when this movie came out. So, you know, you know, you think that the character, if a wedding ring fell off, you'd think it was someone who, you know, is younger, possibly, you know, just got married, and that's why the ring fell off. But they're also showing to us that, okay, here is, you know, this woman who has this job. And again, we're going to get to that later in this minute about a little more information about who she is and why she's there. But it's just, I think you're completely right. You know, they're dealing with a typical thing that happens to these people in this type of job in order to distract us from the fact that these people are going to have to change what they're doing and their attitudes very soon because of everything else that's going on.
Yeah, as opposed to not having this little interlude into the toilet where you just go right to the problems at hand and there is no character development. There is no buildup.
That's right.
Of tension, and it's just thrown at you. And that's all in the writing.
Correct.
You know,
so the screenplay was written by Peter Stone and based on the novel by John Godey, Godey, which is actually a pen name. His real name was I think Richard Friedgood. I think that was his name. Morton Friedgood. Morton Friedgood. Again, you've probably never heard of him. But again, he wrote this amazing book that was turned into a very thrilling movie by Peter Stone. Did you ever meet the director of this movie, Joseph Sargent?
No.
No.
Okay. No. What I remember, I think he did more television than film.
He did.
Yeah, just off the top of my head. He did some pretty impressive work on television, too, I believe. Again, just off the top of my head. I'm not
looking at him. He did. He's a very prolific director with a lot of things. I mean, he lived to the age of 89. And he directed 92 different movies, according to IMDb. Some of them good, some of them less good. He did direct Jaws: The Revenge. You know, the one that Michael Caine famously said, you know, when he was asked if he ever saw the movie, and he goes, "No, but I've seen the new house it bought me."
That's what I was going to say. That's a paycheck.
That's right.
Yeah, that's a good line from Caine.
Yes, it truly is. And so basically, these characters just going about their business, trying to figure things out. And, you know, then we hear in the background, someone goes, "But Kaz." And then Mrs. Jenkins starts apologizing. She goes, "Sorry about that, Mr. Dolowitz. It just slipped off." And then he goes, "What were you doing with your hand in the john anyway?" And she goes, "My hand wasn't." And then he points to the plumber and goes, "Go fish it out, would you? The toilet's behind the board." And then, you know, basically he's trying to, Marino is trying to get Kaz's attention. And he goes, "Look, Kaz, for Christ's sakes, will you listen to me? There's a train down." And Kaz just keeps talking. He goes, classification's been open for women for only a month, and already we're in the goddamn toilet. Which is an interesting comment, because what he's basically telling us at this point is that up until a month before this story takes place, women were not allowed these type of jobs. You know, they've right. changed it that they can now give women jobs in the mid 70s.
And that's true.
So again, it's a throwaway line, but it tells us so much more about what's going on here. You know, you know, here we're in this very, very small room where he basically says the toilet's behind the board, which basically makes it sound, and again, I don't know this for a fact, that, you know, there's just a little bit of a divider.
Like a wall or a partition or something?
Exactly, some sort of partition between them and the bathroom, because they're in this small little room. And, you know, for them to even say that, okay, now we have to let women in here, that also says something about that. That, you know, here you're in this small little area where there probably isn't a very blatant partition between, you know, where they're working and where they have to take their little breaks. And, you know, they now have to deal with a woman in this place also from that same perspective.
And that's taking the focus away from what's happening, because the guy says, you know, he says there's a train down, but nobody's even listening.
That's right. Because it's more important to be talking about the fact that A,
about the ring.
A, there's a ring, but he's also talking about the fact that, you know, Kaz is basically saying from his perspective, you know, why are they even letting women into this type of
this is a definite job. See what happens, look at what has happened so quickly, because women are now allowed to do this.
That's right.
You know, which again, you know, is pointing right to the time that the film was made.
That's right.
But it's interesting.
Now in the novel, I've like found a few things that jump out at me. But one of them is the whole thing with Kaz Dalovitz. He's swearing left and right throughout the whole story. And he basically makes a comment about the fact that, you know, here, I'll even read the quote. He goes, Christ, if I had to watch my language, I'm going to pack it in. Did they think of that when they opened up Towerman classifications to women? How the hell can you run a railroad without swearing?
He said that? That's in the book?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the way it was.
Exactly.
Not good, you know, but luckily it's changed.
Correct.
It's not like that anymore.
Correct. But again, it's
now women swear.
You know. Yes, women swear at that time too, but maybe
I know.
Maybe
I
not
know.
In these type of jobs.
Right.
But what, again, it's interesting that, you know, we talked about this a little bit about this yesterday, that one of the things that they do here is they let us get to know who these characters are. And just by the way that Kaz is talking, both in the book and here, we get an impression of who he is. For better or for worse. Again, I'm not saying it judgmentally. I'm saying just that it fleshes him out. Which I like the way that they do that. Again, you don't have to agree with what he says and how he says it and anything like that. That's fine. It doesn't make a difference. But they still successfully show us who he is.
And they do this. These actors do this. These supporting actors do this. That they're the real meat to any feature film, especially a film like Taking of Pelham. You know, you got the stars, you got the co-stars, you got the, you know, maybe the third lead, the fourth lead, and then you get these character actors that are only in a movie for a very short amount of time, and maybe they're peppered throughout the movie, but they're only in it for a short amount of time, and you know them. You almost know what their homes look like just by their characters. You know what their lives are like, and that's all writing and acting.
Mm-hmm. And again, in a novel, it's easier to flesh that out. In a movie, it's not, and they're very successful here by doing that. You know, just by the mannerisms of the characters.
And, just by their mannerisms, yeah.
You know, and
yeah, I miss that.
And I love that.
I miss that in films.
Yes.
You know, we get it every once in a while, but we don't get it a lot. In 1974, it was the norm to a certain extent, that, when, especially films, like this city, the command center central, they're all the dialogue. It's all part of the film. It's all part of the fabric of that movie. And, again, I just miss films like this. Again, some are being made, but not a
They're
whole
few
lot.
and far between because people don't have the patience to sit through 20 minutes of exposition in a movie.
And that's sad.
Of course, it's sad. It's wrong
That's really sad.
because
It's
they're
wrong.
missing out. And but I think that's part of the problem with movies these days is that people are looking for shortcuts. That's why there are so many remakes. That's why there are so many rehashings of old ideas and stuff like that because or taking a TV show and saying let's make it into a movie or vice versa and things like that. It's the idea of I don't know if laziness is the right word. It might be but the ideas is that they're losing the innovative aspect of it of looking for something new and fresh. It's like, hey, this worked before, so let's do it again.
Well, this is a perfect. This movie's a perfect example. I don't know if we're supposed to be talking about this later, but it was remade
Yes,
twice.
it was, and
There's
they
no reason to remake this movie.
no reason whatsoever, and
No,
both of the remakes are not very good.
they're not very good. And the second remake, I mean, the most recent remake, I mean, we're talking major players made this movie
That's right.
with major stars. And I can only go to Magnificent Seven and other films that have been remade recently. And is it, I'm like you, is it laziness? Is it, they're offering the actors or the directors so much money that they're stupid to say no. I don't know what it is, but in the long run, it has definitely hurt the art.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, again, we talked about this last season when we were talking about not you and but me and my guests talked about the fact that when we were talking about Die Hard 4 and 5, where both of those were just paychecks because
Paychecks.
they were not they're not Die Hard movies with the way that things happened. I mean, come on, you as a distributor, okay, when would you when do you think the best time to release a Die Hard movie is, even if it's the fifth Die Hard movie? When would you around what time of year would you release it?
Summer.
Summer. Exactly. Do you know when Die Hard 5 was released?
No.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah, it's so.
That is the perfect movie that you're going to take the woman you love to go see. And it
Somebody made a lot of money to make that decision.
that's right. And that's the point. The movie made a lot of money the first weekend, and that was it, because people realized what it was. But when you hear, oh, it's a Die Hard movie, let's go out and see it. Let's spend a lot of money on opening weekend, which makes sense because why would they make a bad Die Hard movie? And then after that, everything teeters off because everyone looks at it and goes, okay, well, if you're really gonna see this, wait until it comes out on DVD or on cable. That type of thing.
But it's everywhere. It's you look at, you just go down the list, Die Hard, Jaws,
Even Jurassic Park nowadays, same thing.
Jurassic Park, Rocky, Rambo, Terminator. Let's just keep on going. We can go on and on and on. And back in the day, in the 50s and this in the 40s, and they did remake movies. Sometimes the same director remade his own film. But they
They
were
were
few
trying
and
to make
far
it.
between.
If a director remade his own film, it was because he realized that the technology allowed him to make something better, not to copy
Yes.
his old work. A perfect example of that is Hitchcock. If you want to talk about the Man Who Knew Too Much, okay. Now the first one is an okay movie, but when he remade
Yeah,
it,
okay.
25 years later, he made an amazing movie.
Well, and then you look at you can even look at Leo McCarey, who made Love Affair with Irene Dunne and Charles Boyer, remakes it years later as an affair to remember with Cary Grant and Deborah Carr. And that movie is a romantic
That's right.
tearjerker, you know, and then it gets remade again.
Okay, but that's Warren Beatty. So
yeah, but
that was Warren Beatty courting his future wife.
It was Beatty courting his future wife, but it was also, if the legend is true, Beatty at a party that Carrie's at, and Cary Grant goes up to Beatty and says, "You should remake this movie." Mm-hmm. Now, whether that's true or not, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. It's Hollywood lore, and that film's not as good as the other two, but it's not horrible. But for me, it's probably higher on my list because it has a wonderful Morricone score, and anything that Morricone does, I'm going to like.
Right.
But,
okay. Yes.
But you know, you got to remember, Ben-Hur was a remake.
Yes, and so was the Ten Commandments.
Ten Commandments was a remake, you know.
Yeah. But again, so, that was because the technology allowed Cecil B. DeMille and also William Wyler to build on something, and they both made masterpieces out of good movies. I mean, I've seen both the original Ben-Hur and the original Ten Commandments. They're not bad. They're very good movies, especially for the art they're made. The Ten Commandments, yeah. I have a problem with the fact that midway through the whole story changed. But whatever.
The whole story changed.
I said to myself, I was watching it, and I'm like, did I find a bad copy of this?
Yeah.
Like, where'd Moses go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, where did Moses go? Yeah. He's still looking.
Seriously.
As we diverse.
Yes. But okay. So the bottom line is that they do a great job here, and this movie never should have been remade. That's what we're basically coming to point out here, along with many other movies that don't need to be remade. And then Kaz sits down, and then he looks up and he sees something on the board, and he goes, "What the hell is that?" And then one of the other guys goes, "That's what Marina's trying to tell you. Southbound Lock." And then Marina says, "He's laying between 28th and 23rd. What the hell for? I don't know.
It's just stopped. Yeah.
He goes, "How long?" "A couple. 3 minutes. Command Center's been trying to raise him, but so far he don't answer his phone. Geez, Kaz. Why don't he answer his phone?" Nah, it's been too long. Maybe his radio's busted. And the son of a bitch is too lazy to climb down and use the telephone. I'm going to write him up for this, goddammit. I'm going to have his ass." Again, this, you know, 45 seconds of Kaz tells us so much about this character. And in some ways endears him to us. Which
Oh, without a doubt.
What they want to do here. They want us to care about this character. Yeah, I'm not going to say why, but they want us to care about him. And it's just done really well. And again, looking at the technology behind them is also great as they're having this conversation. And then the shot changes, and we're back in the train itself, in the cab. Mm-hmm. And we basically see that Green is the only one inside the cab, and he's moving things along, and we see that he's detaching between the train and that they're on, and as the train backs up, we see Brown and Bud standing there at the entrance, where Brown is still holding this very large package for some reason.
Right.
Right. And that's how this minute ends. So is there anything else you wanted to talk about in this minute?
No, it's just, again, it's a slow build with a whole lot of things happening in front of that slow build. But if you're seeing it for the very first time, you're still not 100%, you know, something's happening, but you're not positive what that something is going to be. And it's great.
Exactly.
Great filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. All right. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Blues Day Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Robert Shaw performances. So once again, I know you hate doing I know you hate classifying things, one through five, but But I still would like you to do that for the performances of Robert Shaw.
Troll was a little bit tougher because I had, I'll be honest, I hadn't seen a lot of them. A lot of the British stuff I hadn't seen. And also reading my handwriting. But number five would be a good performance in a bad movie called Black Sunday.
Oh, I love that movie, actually.
Do you really?
I think it's an amazing plot, and it's played out really well. Obviously, it's not perfect. But I like the idea of what they were doing there.
Yeah, the idea probably is much better than the actual film. It just maybe because when I seen it, I saw it in the theaters, but there were so many other quote unquote disaster movies or however you want to call it.
Well, that wasn't you can't really call that a disaster movie. That's more of a terror type of thriller.
Yeah, but it still involves. Thousands of people maybe getting killed.
Okay, of course, yeah. But again, I think Bruce Dern is just amazing in that movie.
He's okay in it.
Okay.
He's just, yeah.
Joe, we've talked about this many times that if everyone always loved every movie the exact same way, there would be nothing to talk about.
So. There'd be nothing to talk about, yeah. number four would be the very... Blonde, if I can remember, Robert Shaw in From Russia with Love. great fight scene. Great Bond villain. Number three, Man for All Seasons. You're talking classical Thomas Moore, bordering on Shakespeare, just costume drama. Early in his career, just a good performance. And moving on to God, these last two are so tough. Could you want me to rate them? The Sting would be number two for a whole lot of reasons. He's just Shaw in it, and then number one, there is only number one, and it's Jaws.
Yeah. So far, you're the fourth person. In the last 4 weeks to label that performance in Jaws and the story of the Indianapolis as the number one. And I have a feeling that is a trend that will continue through this entire season. I
can't imagine anybody, maybe, there could be some classical film, not classic film, but films about like A Man for All Seasons, those costume dramas might put him up there, but to replace Jaws. But you've heard so many stories about that monologue, and the most recent being from Spielberg himself and the new documentary Jaws at 50. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
No, I haven't actually seen it yet.
So he comes and he's gone. I mean, he's so drunk, and but he can act, and he comes and he does the monologue, but he's pretty well wasted. Everybody knows he's wasted, and he does it, and they get it. They get the shot. Everything's fine. 2 o'clock in the morning, Spielberg's in the hotel trying to sleep, get whatever little sleep he got while he's making that movie, and the phone rings, and it's Shaw, and Shaw is almost crying on the phone. He says, "I ruined your movie. You got to let me do it again." And Spielberg was like, "We got it. You're fine. It's fine." He goes, "No, you got to let me do it again." And the next day they reshot. And that's what we've seen. Wow. That's what we've seen, which was the second. I would love to see the first take. Huh. Uh-huh. And he just came in and he nailed it.
Wow.
Just nailed it. I always forget who got the Oscar that year.
That's 75 would have been.
Was that Cuckoo's Nest?
That was Cuckoo's Nest. That was, Nicholson.
But he would have, Shaw would have been supporting. Was it, did Brad Dourif?
No, Brad Dourif didn't win that year.
It was somebody that actually gave a pretty good performance. and I forget. Yeah, forgive me. I forget who won Best Supporting Actor against Shaw. And it's not a performance that we all remember it like we remember Shaw's performance, but it was a pretty damn good performance. Oh, is it Timothy Hutton in Ordinary People?
No. That was 80. That was 80.
Okay. You know, again, you know, you look back 50 years later, and it's like, oh, well, Robert Shaw should have taken that Oscar. But, you know, at the time.
Ah, that was okay. That was George Burns. George Burns got it for the Sunshine Boys.
Yeah, without a doubt, Robert Shaw should have won that.
Yes.
And I love George Burns. But you talk about a sentimental Oscar.
Right. I mean, the other nominees that year were Brad Dourif for Cuckoo's Nest, Burgess Meredith for The Day the Locust, Chris Sarandon for Dog Day Afternoon, and Jack Warden for Shampoo. Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking. That's all we can say. Yeah.
They were thinking he was 100 or 99, and 75% of the voting academy grew up with George Burns and loved George Burns, and yeah. Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
He was robbed. Anyway.
Well, he wasn't. The fact that he was, I would have been happier if he was at least nominated. You know, that's the thing. You can't say that George Burns robbed him of the Oscar.
Yeah.
But one of these other guys, George Burns deserved to be one of the five because he's great. He is great in The Sunshine Boys. There's no question about that. Which of those would I have taken off the list? Maybe Burgess Meredith. Maybe.
I don't remember that performance because I saw that movie and I don't remember that movie a whole lot. I guess I remember more of Donald Sutherland, but you know, Warden is fantastic in Shampoo.
Yes.
Though he's fantastic in every movie he ever made.
Yeah, I love him in 12 Angry Men also. You know, that's
He's great in Heaven Can Wait.
Yes.
He's just a great actor. But anyway.
Yes. All right. Excellent. And now we will once again play the game of name that remake. So I will spin the wheel and we will see what movie comes up this time that hopefully you've seen. Okay. Okay. This one I know you're going to get very easily. The original movie came out in 1976. And the remake was in 2005. All right. And it's about a washed up athlete who is convinced to come out of retirement and help a group of kids.
God, it could be like a million movies. A washed up athlete that is going to. When did the remake come out?
76 and 2005.
Well, 76 is Rocky. It's not Rocky. 76 is also...
A washed-up athlete is hired to help out a group of kids.
What sport?
As soon as I tell you the sport, you're going to know the answer in a second.
Don't take for granted.
It's not football. You
know? Oh, great.
It's not hockey. It's not basketball.
So it's baseball, and it's is it a remake or is it a
the original movie? The original movie came out in 1976, and the remake of the exact same idea was in 2005.
So it's not Bad News Bears.
Yes, it is.
No.
And you see that.
It could be. I mean, because there's so many of those types of movies made over the past 30 years, you know, the sports hero that falls from grace and then gets a job teaching either poor kids or there's so many of them. But
right.
That's Bad News Bears.
Okay, again, because you know we talked about the Bad News Bears yesterday. I didn't want to.
Yeah, I know.
You
know, I know.
And that also shows how random this is. You know,
it is random.
I did this completely random. I did not know that that's what you would get, and I find it very funny. See, that's my birthday present for you. The limo's not going to show up.
I'm two for two, baby. I'm two for two this week.
So far, that's right. And yes, it is the Bad News Bears. If I, you know, my synopsis would obviously be different if I didn't, if you didn't have to try and guess, I would have said a washed up baseball player, you know, is hired to coach a little league team. You know, that would have been the
that's pretty simple. Yeah.
That would be too simple. Yeah. I needed to make it a little bit more difficult for you. But
what's his name? Butter? Is it Butter, Buttermaker?
Buttermaker. Yeah.
Buttermaker.
Yeah. See, now I want to rewatch that movie.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And I will. That's the thing. You won't. I will. All right. So would you like to once again tell people where they can find Joe Amedee?
They can find Joe Amedee at virgilfilms.com. Or if you want to contact me, I'm at joe@virgilfilmsent.com.
All right.
Anytime you want.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. Find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow,
achoo. Gazoo time.